Thank you for joining us today for the Church Planning Conversation podcast. And I'm excited to have my friend Yale Kim with us. Yale, it's great to have you today. How are you?
Great to be here, Winfield.
So Yale, you are chairman of the Prayer Council, which is really a global movement that's championing prayer around the nations, but on college campuses. And introduce yourself and tell us a little bit about kind of this prayer movement that you're leading.
Sure. So the Prayer Council actually started as the United States National Prayer Council in 84, and it came out of a 40-day prayer and fast that happened in D.C. I've since inherited it in 2017. I'd been serving with it for a couple of years at that point.
Okay.
And it was based in Sacramento, California, but with, far-reaching all over the world. And so I think where we're at right now is a generational transfer where there's, kind of in some ways, people who've been like the old guard, and there's a next generation that's coming and picking it up, and it's really exciting. And at the same time, it's a different season in American church history.
Yes.
It's a different season in some of the places like even Korea. I'm Korean.
Okay.
And so you look at what's going on in Korea, it's a different season, but it's an exciting one because there's a lot of space for growth, lot of space for God to move. And so exciting. I run the Prayer Council, and we've got teams all over the world, different countries, continents, and it's really not so much about a network as much as it is about relationship.
Yes.
And so much of what we recognize hinges on relationship. And so I like to say the currency of the kingdom is relationship.
That's good. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, it's really, we're kind of in the midst of kind of a new wineskin, aren't we? And prayer's really at the heart of that. God's kind of, I think, tell people we're kind of not necessarily post-COVID, but really the pandemic kind of really brought to the surface stuff that was already kind of shifting underneath the ground. And so you've got a cool day job. That sounds like a pretty neat thing that you get to do.
It is amazing, definitely, to be able to pray. And prayer, I feel like it touches everything. Mm-hmm. It could touch everything. And so whether it's the marketplace, people going through just the difficulty of COVID and what we've experienced, things that churches are experiencing right now. I mean, I think about churches in the U.S., how they've really, numbers have been dropping steadily, that kind of thing, and hopefully they're coming back up. But, prayer has been this thing that we can do individually, we can do corporately, and then there's that whole element of what I'll say partnering with heaven, what I call intercession, and interceding for people. And so I've been really blessed to be involved in it. And it's exciting right now because it feels like people are more tuned in to the idea of prayer. Mm-hmm. And we're seeing that happen with various movements all over the world.
It seems like there's a fresh openness, fresh hunger. It seems like really we're in the midst of where the Spirit's really calling the church back to prayer. And I think, piggyback on what you just said, like prayer, everybody can do it. Mm-hmm. You don't have to have a degree. You don't have to have certain credentials.
Right.
You could, be a baker. You could be a mother at home with a baby. The call to prayer is for all Christians everywhere. Talk to us about that.
Absolutely. Well, if I may take a step back, even people who aren't believers pray. They just don't call it prayer per se, right? Yeah. We've all heard the idea there are no atheists in foxholes. Well, you think about this. When you're put in these situations where you feel like maybe there's no hope, this is an opportunity. People do pray. It's probably one of the most unnatural things for someone to sit there and to pray, but all of a sudden, they believe that somebody's listening, right? And so how powerful is that? So I think it's so true for believers, who we profess Christ. He says he sits at the right hand of God the Father and makes intercession for us. Well, why would we not pray? Why would we not tap into the King of the creator of the universe, the King of our lives, who has all power to move on our behalf? And so I think it's somewhat of a lost art in some ways in the church, but I believe it's coming back. I am so encouraged when I travel around the country or even to the nations and I find people of prayer. Because I believe prayer precedes moves of God. And so like one of my friends, good friends, David Smithers, he's like a church revival historian. He's probably like a lot of the guys that are watching this. They've got, you know, out of print books, you know, they got bookshelves and all that. And he says that prayer and revival, he kind of puts them together, and missions are two sides of the same coin.
Yes.
And I think that's true. He gave me an example, I think in 95 at Wheaton, you saw a move of God, and you saw about, I think at one point they only had eight students registered for summer missions.
Mm-hmm.
Something happens at that chapel that year, now they've got 300 students going.
Yeah.
You know, here at Asbury, same deal, right?
Yeah, Asbury Revival.
Revival. Yep. You had that happen in 1970. You know, that was probably another wave, because I think in 1950 something happened as well. But you saw 140 groups sent out.
Yeah.
And as a Southern Californian, you know, I didn't even realize this until recently. We've reaped the reward. You've got a group, I think it was Glenn Kaiser, I don't totally, but maybe I don't have his name right, but went from here to Southern California. Mm-hmm. And my understanding is instrumental in birthing the Jesus People movement.
Yeah.
And so how powerful is that? But I mean, it was birthed through prayer. A lady named Janine Brabon began to pray, right? And so, I mean, you could look at church history. I mean, there's prayer that sparked so many things. Yeah. And so, we could talk for a long time about
that. Yeah, no, I think what I love about that, what we're touching on is, when you look at history, so, you know, one of my books, Marks of a Movement, looks at the movemental dynamics of early Methodism, the early Wesleyan revival. Mm-hmm. And it was birthed out of prayer. You know, individuals were praying, then they began to pray corporately. Mm-hmm. And it always starts, movements always start small.
Mm-hmm.
You know, often it's something we hear about these big movemental numbers in China and other places, but actually, these are ordinary people gathering in ordinary places in small groups, praying faithfully. And many of these great revivals started with grandmothers, you know, just ordinary
Hebrides
people.
Revival.
Yeah,
yep. Mm-hmm.
That were just on their knees and just seeking God. And you touched on something I want to kind of parse out that I think is really significant. Oftentimes we think of like prayers like this kind of auxiliary thing over here and mission as something over here, but really what we see is the great mission movements throughout history were birthed out of prayer, birthed out of revivals, the Wesleyan revival, the Moravian prayer, there was this 100-year prayer movement that fueled this great missionary movement. And when we look at like church planting movements around the world today, these are ordinary people praying. So talk to us about that intersection of prayer, mission, starting new churches, evangelism. I'd love
Absolutely.
To hear that.
I'm so moved. You mentioned the Moravians. You talk about, you know, Count Zinzendorf opening up Herrnhut.
Yes.
And you've got these guys that really, I mean, they were refugees.
Yes.
Fleeing persecution, and they were there and they did community and life together. And they had what they call the 100-year prayer meeting. Mm. And I'm just reminded of the phrase, you know, there was a group that went, it might have been the first group that left, and one of the guys was running alongside the boat and said, "May the Lamb receive the reward of his suffering." I mean, that's pretty intense, but I feel like it's true. Today, there are prayers that birth movements, and I can think of quite a few. I'll put it this way. We had one in Southern California that kind of spread to multi-campus, and it was the Campus Church Network, and a bunch of young kids, partly because nobody told them they couldn't do it, right? Yeah. But out of prayer meetings, getting together, living rooms, dorm rooms, apartments, began to pray, and they got so touched by God that they had a burden for their fellow students. And it grew into a church planning movement. Mm. And they went from UCLA to different campuses all over California. And I think, you know, prayer is a thing that will stoke people to go and step out in faith and do things that, you know, normally we wouldn't think of. And again, I said, you know, nobody told them they couldn't do it. They just did it. Even in my personal life, when I was in high school, we had little living room prayer meetings, 30, 40 of us. And oftentimes completely student led. And out of that, we've gone and done street evangelism, things that normally we wouldn't have done, but because of something that happened in that living room, something that happened in that prayer time, we've seen us go out and do things. And many of those leaders now, today, are pastors, ministers. I could think of Jeanette, she's a professor, you know. So you've got all these things that have been birthed out of prayer. I think about American history, Father Nash, and just what he's done. In terms of prayer, before a move of God would happen in the city, he would go and pray. And so it's amazing the role of prayer in revival history, in church planning, that kind of a thing. And yeah, at first it could be a little overwhelming, but it just starts small. Just like you were saying, it could be just me and God. I think about Jeremiah Lamphere. Little prayer meeting on Fulton Street in New York in 1857 in the context of the great bank crisis.
Yeah.
And, you know, he sits there and prays, and I think for like the first 15 minutes, 30 minutes, nobody shows up.
Mm.
But, you know, by the end of this meeting, he's got maybe 20, 30 people who's come up. And then through this whole entire period of a year, they say something like of a million people came to Christ in that period.
Oh, wow.
Because Jeremiah Lamphere started a businessman's prayer meeting during the lunch hour in a week. So how amazing would that be if today, you know, business guys got together, started to pray in their lunch hour?
Well, there really is something that seems to be happening in the church world where God is moving in the marketplace. In some ways, I think maybe it was Billy Graham, I think, toward the end of his life said the next move of God is going to be in the marketplace.
Right.
And I think one of the things that we're seeing is like there's a lot of like church planning things that are happening in kind of, you know, entrepreneurial businesses, mission expressions that are emerging, and leaders are gathering. Ordinary people are coming together in prayer. And again, all of these great movements were kind of birthed in a back room somewhere.
You know,
I think of Azusa Street,
wow.
you know, kind of, you know, Jesus was born in a manger, you know, and it's just when ordinary people come together and pray, what I love about prayer is, again, everyone can do it. You
Absolutely.
Know, it doesn't take a degree, it doesn't take money, it doesn't take curriculum.
Right.
You don't have to, you know, you don't have to go to seminary to do it. Everybody can do it. And God answers prayer, doesn't he?
Like that's Absolutely.
It's what's promised to us in the Bible.
Right.
And we have access to that
Absolutely.
Today.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah, we have a saying at the prayer council. It says, we're just ordinary people praying extraordinary prayers.
There you go. I love that.
Yeah. And so, you know, talk about business as missions, if you allow me.
Yeah.
I just got back from Estonia.
Yes.
And it was bizarre.
Tell us some stories.
Yeah, so we're out there. We're planning to do this global prayer event, really to gather people from all over the world to pray for the ending of the war in Ukraine. Mm. I'm out there, and I, you know, just post something. And one of my friends on Facebook, who I hadn't talked to probably for a few years, just reaches out to me, says, hey, you're in Estonia. Let me connect you to some guys.
Yeah.
And so they connect me to some guys. I like coffee. I don't know if you like coffee, but they're running a coffee shop in Tallinn, Estonia.
Yeah.
So I show up. They say, hey, why don't you show up? We're going to have a little get together and we pray Friday mornings. Why don't you come 9 a.m.? So I walk in and man, I'll tell you, I walk in and I could tell that these were Jesus loving people.
Yes.
And I got to spend a lot of time with them, but they're doing business as missions, and it's Christian guys that are trying to impact the secular market and to teach coffee in a country of 1.3 million people who, you know, not that long ago was part of the USSR, you know, and had, you know, really economically depressed situations. And they're trying to create jobs. They're trying to bring light into the marketplace. They're trying to make an impact in their community. And they start with prayer. You know, in the mornings, and it was so encouraging to be with them and to see what's going on, and they really believe that they have the ability through the marketplace to impact not only just government, but economics, education, all these things. And so It's amazing to see that. I think the marketplace really is a tool to take the kingdom to the nations.
And you see this in the Bible. You see this with Paul, with the tent-making ministry, and Paul's background opened up the roads for him to be able to take the gospel beyond the Jews to the Gentiles. Mm-hmm. And that's really where the people are not in the churches. They're not in the four walls of the church building. And I feel like there's this reshuffling, this kind of moment where God is kind of reorient. It's a new wineskin is, I think, the best analogy that I give for what God's doing in this moment. What's fascinating for me is a lot of the leaders in the missional church conversation the last decade plus have been talking about post-Christendom and, you know, the church plateaued. And, you know, we've quoted these numbers, but I think we really are. Again, I think the pandemic has kind of accelerated many of the changes and challenges that the church was already facing. A lot of the cultural swirl that was already happening, it's brought all of that to the surface. So what we're witnessing is a lot of churches that probably were limping toward dying are closing a lot faster. Mm-hmm. But you also have the emergence of this new thing that the Lord's doing. And Absolutely. God is creating platforms for new emerging, especially multicultural voices that maybe didn't have the big platforms before.
Right.
And it really is, you know, I think one of the most exciting moments in church history for us right now.
Yeah.
We're living through, you know, if the Lord tarries, I believe we're living through a significant period of church history. In 100 years, I think they will be writing about this chapter that we're living through.
Right.
And it probably will be this new wineskin, the marketplace, entrepreneurial prayer at the very heart of it.
Yeah, there's guys, so I was in Chattanooga a few years ago, Chattanooga, Tennessee, and there's Christian businessmen that got together and decided to build a coffee shop. I don't know if you're familiar with this.
Yeah, the downtown Chattanooga.
Yes,
the
Camp House.
Camp House, I know them. We're part of the same denomination.
Okay, fantastic.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Right, I mean, but you take something like that, and there's guys.
Chris Sorensen, yep.
And they've got a church in there on Sundays, but they're a functioning coffee house during the week.
Yep.
And that does amazing things for their model in terms of finances and different things. Well, there's guys in Orlando that are doing something similar.
Yep.
Maybe not a coffee shop per se, but they've got co-working space. They've got a school that's in there during the week. And this, there's no reason why this can't be done, you know, in the nations, all over in different places.
Yes.
I think about Robert Shin, who's a pastor, Korean pastor, first gen, was an immigrant, came to the U.S. in a little town in between L.A. and Orange County, heard the call of God, decided to be a missionary, goes over to Kenya. I mean, he was like a successful business guy with laundromats, dry cleaning, that kind of thing, sells everything, goes to Kenya, decides to plant churches, and then because of the need, has to build a seminary or a Bible school, and he plants churches with schools attached to them.
Yes.
And he does something like 400 churches.
Oh, wow.
And now he's back in L.A., and he has one of the biggest churches in L.A. It's called Glory Church of Jesus Christ. If you drive down the 10 freeway, you could see it on the south side where it says Glory Church of Jesus Christ. And I think it's like the old Olympic boxing arena where they shot Rocky, one of the Rocky movies, right?
Okay.
But I mean, how amazing is that? And so it's new models. We're in this place where we're looking at things, and it's like it's not what it was before, but it's something that God's using and allow me to say breathing on and giving.
And it's an empowering of the body of Christ. So, you know, the last church we planted, through a long story, I had a donor approach me about opening an art gallery, and we launched an art gallery that we called it the gallery, and it ended up being how our church grew. And we have First Friday art shows. Every artist in the entire county ended up coming to church.
Right.
Hundreds of people were kind of impacted through this.
Yeah.
And we did arts for the kingdom.
That's amazing. And I imagine there's people, artists that showed up that don't even know Jesus.
People came to faith in that space.
Yeah.
And it was this, you know, to use kind of theological, it was a liminal space. It was this, a threshold that allowed the church to kind of go into the community. And I think that's where that marketplace engagement is. We're going to where the world is. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of inverting the paradigm shift for especially those of us in the West, where it's been like, that, you know, people need to come to us, you know, the four walls of the church building. Right. Actually, the Lord's saying, go to where the people are. And that's what Jesus did. That was the difference between Jesus and, you know, the early Jewish leaders. He actually went out to where they were. I wonder, what are a couple kind of key takeaways for those that are watching, listening, that what are some stuff that you're seeing, a couple things that you would say, hey, from, you know, across the U.S., around the world, what are two or three, like, big picture things that you're seeing?
Yeah, I'm seeing young people. So we always hear the statistics, right? I mean, all these numbers decline, young people. I mean, I think about even Korea right now, there's a whole generation of young people who I think 97% of them are unchurched, which isn't all that different than what we're experiencing here to a certain degree. But I would say look at the 3% or whatever small percentage that are actually in church. They're not just in church, they're engaged. Yeah. I remember being in college in the late 90s and being involved in campus ministry. Well, on college campuses in California in the 90s, I mean, if you were a believer, you know, you went out to a campus ministry, it wasn't a question of whether or not you love Jesus or not. I mean, you really love Jesus because you were there at the meeting and it was evident. Well, I would say that's true of young people today. And even more so, there's young people who really love Jesus, are coming to the faith, sharing their faith, people who are coming to their faith. And we're in that moment of generational transfer where there are young people who are going to be doing amazing things, whether it's marketplace, whether it's the arts, or whether it's education, like my wife, or people who are doing it, you know, in church planning. Mm-hmm. And it's an exciting time. And it's probably a time where we need to pray for them. I'm going to throw that in there, right? But we need to pray and really encourage, and then be willing to be the answer to our prayers. Yeah. And so one of the things I always encourage people to do is, okay, for example, we have the Collegiate Day of Prayer coming up here at Asbury to celebrate the 200-year anniversary of the concert of prayer for college campuses. Yeah. And the thing is, okay, we're going to ask you to pray for college campuses, but I also want us to be willing to say, okay, now God, would you send me? And what does that look like? Maybe I'm not on, you know, maybe my parents or whoever is involved in this are not on the college campus per se, but perhaps God would bring a young person in their lives that they could be, you know, have some kind of influence on and be willing to be sent in that way. Yeah. And so I think that's definitely one of the things that we're seeing today is just the rise of young people who love Jesus and what that looks like, what their faith looks like lived out in their lives. Second thing, I think we are in a point where we're going to see, a massive move of God in the nations. And you know, who would have known if you came to us 5-10 years ago and said, you know, one of the greatest moves of God that are happening on the earth right now is Iran, will be Iran.
Yeah.
I mean, no one would, people would have been like, what? But I really believe that's been a work of prayer. People who have been praying for the 1040 window, the Middle East, that kind of thing. Well, I mean, even in America, think about 1790. I think J. Edwin Orr gave this amazing message at the World Prayer Congress in the 70s, and he talked about the statistics of how bad it was in America. And Jonathan Edwards and Erskine started to write letters, and there were prayer meetings that started to happen. And America experienced our longest period of revival from the late 1790s to about 1840. So much so, people would say to parents, if you want your child to have a relationship with God, send them to the college campus, which is bizarre. We would never think of that today, but that was the case. And my prayer and my hope is that we will see a move of God in awakening, not only in America, but in the nations of the earth, even in the hardest and darkest places. And this is why we need church planters. I think about Japan that's been opened up since 1853. You know, Commodore Perry went in there with battleship diplomacy, gunboat diplomacy, and they opened up to the gospel. But even now, you look at things, I think it's like less than 1.5% Christian. Mm. And that number may be actually declining because of people are aging out.
Yeah.
And there's great guys like Joe Hanley at Asia Access and different other ministries that are out there, Andy Game, who's engaging in the arts. But we need church planters that will go there and plant churches. I mean, you talk about, you know, the third largest economy in the world, right? Yeah. That's been open to the gospel.
Yeah.
MacArthur, when he was over there, he actually asked for us to send missionaries.
Yeah.
And we didn't quite fill that task, right? Yeah. And so that was a lost opportunity. But we need church planters. And so that starts with praying.
Yeah, that's great. One of our presenters at our last global summit was a church planter in Japan. And one of my favorite Christian artists was a Japanese Christian artist, iconographer. Say it, Sadeo Watanabe. Beautiful, beautiful iconography. Man, this has been rich. This has been incredible. How can people connect with you in prayer and connect with this prayer movement?
Sure. So you can go, we have a great Facebook group, actually, just because the way algorithms work.
Yep.
And so the Prayer Council, and we have a website, theprayercouncil.com. You can get to our social media through there.
Okay.
We'd love for people to connect there. And then if you would join us for the Collegiate Day of Prayer, again, every last Thursday of February every year, we are praying. And this year's Asbury. Next year, I think we're going to Baylor or Waco.
Yeah, okay.
So how exciting is that? But we would cherish everyone's prayers. And really, I think if we see the awakening, this will trickle towards, you know, churches being planted all over the world. So
yeah,
I just want to thank you for having me. And
Amen. Thank you, Yale, for joining us, and blessings on your ministry. Keep us in prayer. We'll pray for you and join in this movement of prayer, what God's doing around the world.
Sure, will do. God bless.
Thanks.